Hi, Rocketeers. Welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. I'm Karen Tongson, filling in for our guy, who may be at this very moment while we're recording on the set of Conan O'Brien. We can't verify that, but I think that there's a likelihood. Anyway,
We'll
know by the end of today. So with me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining, you heard that magical voice give you a little preview. It's our digital strategist, Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh.
Hi, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, newlywed. How have you been? We've been missing you.
Oh, I missed you guys too. Thank you so much to you, to Margaret, to Guy, to Laura, to the Max Fun family, to the fans and listeners. I sound like I'm winning.
With the Chabad telethon, it's okay.
Thank you for your patience while I make this huge life transition. It was so helpful, so necessary. I am back. I am have a totally different vision of pop culture as we know it.
And our visionary is here with a new, like, Rohrbaugh addition to the name to the life.
You say it perfectly.
Rohrbaugh. Oh, nice.
You know how many people jack that name up?
I can imagine there might be some ish, but, you know.
They don't even say, sometimes when we're at the store, they don't even, like, say, or, you know, like, anywhere where they have to say Rohrbaugh. They just say
Rara?
No, they Rara? Just say our first names. Because they don't want to, like, they don't even want to attempt to mangle Rohrbaugh.
Well, we're so excited to have you back. And we're so thrilled to have you back that we brought one of our favoritest, most special guests who we love to have here at Pop Rocket, a film reporter for the LA Times and fashion icon.
Seriously, fashion icon.
Travelle Anderson.
His hair is giving me life.
Isn't it? It has its own mind.
It's just, but it's working. It's thinking on its feet.
Thank you so much.
Travelle. What have you been up to lately?
I've been just trying to maintain my sanity in this world of ours, you know, prepping for the Toronto International Film Festival next week.
Ooh, it's fabulous.
I'm stressed out already.
And I know that, like, you've been talking about your hair having a mind of its own, but I follow you on social media. I see that your hair has many lives. You've got all sorts of, you're trying out a lot of different looks.
I like to switch it up every now and again. It was my birthday last month, so every birthday
you have different hair.
Can I just tell you which would be tight AF if you put some, like, box braids just in that top part.
That is what I had.
That is what was going on.
I get it for my birthday.
Where did I miss it? Shit.
I get it for my birthday every year, or at least for the last couple years.
I was right there in the mix.
Yes.
With it. Okay,
you
good.
Knew what was up. It's everything.
Yes. Well, very excited to see what looks you're going to be bringing to Toronto.
Yes, stay tuned.
Yeah, you'll be melting that Toronto ice.
Killing them at Soho House, Toronto.
Yes.
Coming up on this week's show, we're driving the party lift, and we're going to get into the new season of Insecure on HBO. Plus, we'll each be sharing our latest jams. But first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or events have caught our attention this week. Since you've been gone! Thank you for knowing the cues here, my friends. Since you've been gone, Winter, I grant you the first all about.
I'm coming to you from a summer spent indulging in everything, and I mean everything. I consumed so much media in my spare time because it was such a respite from planning a wedding and dealing with the madness of my life. I watched Hereditary last night, which it came out a couple of months ago. Mm-hmm. It was a Sundance midnight film that kind of scared the shit out of everybody.
I was too scared to see it.
It's scary. I'm just going to tell you it's scary. Ari Aster is the director. This is his first studio film. He did two really art, like below art house. Like Diana Arbus would be
art.
Like, yeah, like Diana Arbus would be like, I mean, Gigi Allen would be like, that's too far. Okay. He made these two shorts that were very creepy and unsettling, and one had to do with incest, something else had to do with cannibalism, I think. I'm not sure. I haven't seen them. But Hereditary is a movie starring Toni Collette, Gabriel Byrne, and Dowd's in it, who, you know, she brings it. And these basically, we're set up in a scenario. Utah is, to me, a big, huge factor in this movie because it's set in Utah.
Oh, really? I didn't even know that about it.
Yeah.
I somehow imagined it happened in some eerie New England town.
It felt like it, but then there's something about Utah where, if you go to the Rockies, the mountains really let you know who's boss. The range sort of tells you, I'm in charge, you're just a visitor. And it plays into sort of the bleakness, but the beauty. There's a lot of bleakness and there's beauty, and that's just sort of how Utah is. The film is about a parent who, it opens with the mother, played by Toni Collette, who is eulogizing her mother, who was mysterious. They had a fraught relationship. It wasn't always good. And you meet her family. Gabriel Byrne's her husband. He's really not very important. Actually, quite useless in this movie. He's just like a couple of plot points. And you meet her kids, played by Millie Shapiro, who's like a Tony nominated or winning young actress. And then her son, played by Alex Wolff, whom I found out, I kept trying to place him. He was in Jumanji. He's been in a couple of other like teenish movies. His mom is Polly Draper.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I was like, why do I know this face? She was in 30-something. And I was like, it's because he looks just like his mom. Fantastic kid actors. I don't like kid actors, but these kids are good. Basically, long story short, the movie is about the fact that they're passing a spirit, a malevolent spirit, on from the daughter into the son that was conjured by the mom. So they have a root on them.
Okay.
Which is deep and dark and dank. But, you know, that's, I don't want to spoil anything. But just to sort of round out why the film, I liked it so much, is because horror has sort of, ever since Get Out, and, you know, Get Out is a good movie. Do I think Get Out will hold up long term? No. Controversial? Sorry.
Oh, wow.
Coming in here with all the controversy.
Oh, sorry. Wow. When you get married, shit changes. Priorities change. I think that Get Out won't hold up long term, even though I think that the work that will come from Jordan Peele will continue to evolve and change genre. I also think about the other movie that came out, A Quiet Place. You know, I don't think about that movie anymore. I actually, when we talked about it on the episode, I didn't think about it really that much after the fact. But they come and they land, and that's sort of what
the good version of horror.
The good version of horror. The goop version of horror. They come and they land and they do their thing, and people talk about it, then they move on. And I think this is one of those movies that didn't do that. It sat with me. It's very dark, and it also, below the gore and the psychological, and it really paces itself as very, you know, you need to settle into this. It talks about family dynamics when a mother is not only an unreliable narrator, but also is not that interested in parenting and is already dealing with her own parental relationship with her parents. And then it shows the dynamic after a major accident and how you interact with each other. And then it just sort of deals with all the things, you know, he says he was inspired by all the great, you know, schlock horror movies and classic horror movies, Psycho, Carrie, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th. It has all those elements of that. And it's very hard to take a slasher movie and mix it with the psychological horror and mix it with the ghost story. And it kind of does all of that without being too aggressive. You get every part of a horror movie that you like. You know, you want gore, you want, you know, a jump scare, you want psychological, you want a twist. You get all of those things and it gathers them up in a room and it really plays on it. I mean, it's 2 hours of just full on like psychological destruction. So it's not for everyone. I don't recommend it if you are seriously currently fighting with your mother like I am.
Well, yeah, or I would say, I mean, you know, domesticity is such a site for many horrors. It can be either the site of comedy or horror, and I think it can skew in various ways. And it sounds like this is something that takes us to another place in relation to that.
Horror movies are not for me.
Yeah, not for
like,
me
I
either.
Barely did Get Out.
Like, really? Because that to me wasn't a horror movie looking back.
It was so much anxiety for me.
Yeah, it was so much.
Yeah, like the kind of tension. I'm with you. I'm totally with you, Travelle. Well, given that, I'm wondering what you're all about is. Is it scary?
It is not. Okay. Praise God. I'm all about Ain't Too Proud to Beg, The Life and Times of the Temptations. It's the new live musical taking place at the Amundsen. I saw it last night. It is so good. Although I will say it wasn't like perfect because you can tell that some of the actors are getting a little hoarse, and so
The notes. You felt that you were a little later in the run, and they're like,
yes,
wearing
you know,
because
they premiered last week here
in
LA.
Wait a second, they already horse and just started.
I know. I said the exact same
How
thing.
How you gonna make it two more weeks?
Listen, and I was just like, this is. I feel like I should have been here on opening night because I want to hear where the voices should be. Mm-hmm. That being said, though, it's one of those shows where like. All of their music is all up and through the show. And right. So it's like, it's very familiar. It's one of those things where like the audience claps along. You know, there weren't enough people of color. So a lot of the clapping was off beat. But
it was on the beat instead of the jab
exactly.
beat.
Exactly.
Did you go the night but that Alan's first wife was there?
I don't think so.
It was like 1 and 3 instead of 2 and 4 was the clapping.
It was a struggle. But we worked it out. It was fine. They got it by the end of the show. We made it work. But it was so good, even with like the hoarseness. It was like, it was so, it takes you back to those, that time, that period.
How's the set? Because from the commercial,
yeah,
it
the commercial
looks very
looks bare.
Lifetime. Yeah, it looks bare in Lifetime movie. A Lifetime movie version of what said set. So the set inside the set of the movie.
The set is simple. However, okay. However, they do this really interesting thing where like the stage moves in circles.
Oh, and so, like Les Mis.
Like a record player yeah, type okay. situation. And so. So they do really interesting things in terms of like the movement of the stage and the action. So we're like, you're not really looking for much else. They also use like projection screens to like project stuff on the wall
Fantastic.
And stuff like that. It works. I was nervous when I walked in. I was like, whoo, this
I
is
it.
Can
I say something? You just reminded me. I've only been inside the Amundsen once, and that's to see the Hamilton LA. Mm. And I hated it.
Oh.
And-
Okay, more controversial.
More right. controversial. I am just
here
no
blowing
prison,
shit up.
Blowing it up. Boom. I don't like the sound in certain parts of that theater. No, I'm sorry. This is the second time. I saw Rock of Ages there and I was in the center and that was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I saw Hamilton and felt like I was listening literally on a Cabbage Patch Kid record.
I agree. I'm this will sound really bougie, but I'm usually in like the bottom center, orchestra center.
Yes.
That's usually where I go. Cause like right. the sound is great there.
Right.
Last night I was a little off
okay.
center.
And it's just...
and it was just like, hold up, what's something wrong with the speaker? Something's not right. And so like the acoustic situation is like a little off in certain parts,
yes.
but it was still a really, really good show. And they're going to Broadway. They'll be on Broadway in the spring. They're...
They better get them
so
drink
this is
some
the
lemon water and
tryouts
honey.
Currently.
Yes.
Right now.
Yes, and so they got picked up, I think, like, over the weekend. They got picked up to go to Broadway, so they'll be premiering. They're going to Toronto after L.A., and then they'll be on Broadway
so
spring
paid?
2019.
What does the state? Barry Gordy, I assume? Who gets paid?
Plenty of people, I'm sure, are getting paid from that. Barry Gordy obviously factors very heavily into the story. Motown, I'm sure there are some dividends being paid out every single night. Because it was a sold-out show, and it's been sold out
okay.
since opening night.
Yeah,
I consistently see the ads for it when I'm at the gym. So
I will continue to consider it.
I will continue to consider it. But now that it has your
it's
endorsement,
good.
I'm like, yeah, I saw Soft Power there and it was
yes.
great. And so I'm excited. You know, I'm always down for a musical.
Yeah.
Musicals.
It's good. It's music that you know. So.
Exactly. So what I'm all about this week is actually, you know, everybody's been talking about Crazy Rich Asians. We talked about it for 2 weeks in a row. But there's another great film that is actually an Asian American production and starring an Asian American male lead with a South Asian director and writer. And that is a movie called Searching.
Yes.
And I saw this over the weekend and I thought it was fantastic. Frankly, it's the directorial debut of Anish Chaganti, and he also co-wrote the film with Sev Ohanian. And John Cho is the lead, and he plays a widowed father whose daughter goes missing.
Mm.
And his daughter Margot, played by Michelle Law, is 16, so a high school student. And so, you know, it's like not an unfamiliar plot. We've seen many versions of this kind of dad seeking the daughter who's gone missing situation. But what is really, truly, I think... captivating about this film is that it's entirely mediated through other screens and through our screen culture. So the minute it opens, you're like in Windows 98,
mm-hmm.
right?
Oh
I mean,
my
it's
God.
Like, you don't see, it's never, you never get a shot that pulls away from some framing, whether it's like a FaceTime
right.
or a chat window or any other, like even kind of like a video that like appears online in Twitter or like a kind of version of a YouTube video. It's, And so at first I thought that I would find that irritating and too disorienting, but actually I think that we've all, as viewers, become so attenuated and accustomed to living our lives completely mediated through screens that I lost nothing in the story. And in fact, it built the tension to only be able to see things through these various perspectives. I thought it was a particularly innovative way of telling a story. And, you know, honestly, I was like crying within the first, like, 7 minutes of the film.
No, it's not amazing.
It's not a spoiler to say, because obviously he's a widowed father. People depict that on the trailer, but you meet the mother, of course. You see this girl from like the minute like she's born, essentially being captured on camera. And the mom, who's played by Sarah Sohn, you get to see like everything, including like her emails coming was like follow up from your checkup and all these things. And one of the saddest moments to me of that film, without giving anything away about anything else, was when he's like trying to like hack his way into one of his daughter's accounts, and he's trying to do it through his wife's old accounts on the computer. And it says when he logs in, your Norton antivirus hasn't been updated for something like 668 days.
Yeah.
And just like that kind of that mundaneness of loss, this thing that just like is quantified by this machine, but that like speaks volumes about how long you've been without somebody, that just destroys you.
Yeah.
And anyway, I think it's a fantastic film. The gimmick is engrossing. You know, one of the things that my wife Sarah said after we saw it is that this film is unique insofar as a lot of other films where you're kind of looking at screen culture or looking at how much our lives are mediated, moralize about that. Like, we spend too much time on our phones, we spend too much time on our computers. But this film doesn't ever do that. Mm-hmm. It just kind of accepts that. It depicts that fact. And so,
well, we address it. We address it because we look at it because it's what it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just what it is. This is the life that we're leading.
Yeah.
And it's easy to criticize. And I feel like I tweeted this to no acclaim last week. But that, you know, I'm tired of drag culture, dragging people. Mm-hmm. Because we're now have so many windows open into lives, because that's how we can sustain anything now.
Right.
Business, finance, interest, culture, whatever. That now we can just criticize every single thing. And it's like, this is the world we've created. So when something like that happens, mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of parents don't immediately think to do something like that. And with the spate of kidnappings and assaults and murders and things that have been happening lately, I mean, I imagine that's now what you have to do. Before, you had to ask friends, read diaries. And
right.
Now you have to literally track people through what happened on their phone.
Yeah.
And their Facebook and their emails.
Their Facebook and their emails.
I saw the film out of Sundance, and it was one of my favorite films there, because it's a thriller, but like, it's not like scary. So there's like some twists and turns there. Shout out to Deborah Messing, who plays the detective.
Detective Vic.
But like, it's so beautifully done, and so interesting the way, and creative, I think, the way that you don't see anything else besides like a computer screen or, like you said, FaceTime, an iPhone, whatever the case may be. It's so engaging in that particular way, which I was surprised about.
Yeah. And given also, like, you know, another film that's blown up recently is Eighth Grade, you know, the Bo Burnham film, where you see her making these videos for YouTube or whatever. I think this gives us a different window onto teendom.
Yeah.
And to like an Asian American teen up in Silicon Valley. And I don't know. I think that for those of you who may have found Crazy Rich Asians lacking for any reason, and you still want to support like Asian American cinema, this is one to go see when it comes to your town.
Definitely.
I think it's probably entering wide release soon, so go check out Searching. Okay, you've been listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back to talk about Insecure right after this.
It's new promo time, James.
Ooh, what you got in that, Kay?
How about this? You need more black friends, Minority Corner, every Friday.
Okay. But, girl, that doesn't say anything about how we're a podcast that talks about queer issues, race, politics, and pop culture.
Now it does, because I've already hit record.
Oh, girl, you so sneaky. You be Linda tripping me.
Minority Corner.
Learn, laugh, and play.
All from a perspective that's black, queer, and ladylike.
Because nobody puts minorities in the corner.
Every Friday.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Karen Tongson. With me in the studio,
Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh.
Yes, and Travelle Anderson.
Oh, so lovely to have you both here. So season three of Insecure is underway. And as of last Sunday, we've had three episodes so far. Travelle, do you want to catch us up on what's going on Insecure this season?
Keep it tight.
Oh, yeah. It's because it's so much going on, right? It's so complicated. So when we left the crew, right, Issa had broken up with Lawrence, right? And so it was very unclear what was going to happen with their relationship. So we delve into that this season. Mm-hmm. Molly, at the time, at the end of last season, was trying to figure out what she was going to do with her job. She was looking at an all-black firm, but she's currently at a white firm. And she found out that a white guy there was making more money than she was making. They're on the same level, but he was making more money than she was making. And then you have Tiffany Dubois, who is pregnant, one of the friends of the group. You have Natasha Rothwell's character, who's just like the funniest one, and she's still the funniest one even in this new season.
Very much
Daniel
Kelly.
Kelly is everything. Daniel is a producer trying to, you know, make that work for him. It's a lot going on.
It's a lot going on, and as we come to discover, like, I mean, there was a lot of kind of crisis around the career situation, too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the things that sort of ended last season was Issa's housing precarity, right?
Yes.
Because, you know, one of the threads of season two was also, like, the kind of encroaching gentrification of Leimert Park and the kind of black neighborhoods of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so Issa's got to find a new place.
Yes.
And this...
Because she kind of burnt up her last one.
Yeah, because she kind of burnt up her last
you know.
One.
Really did.
Really, the dunes are no more.
Right.
And, you know, it's so funny how that, like... for each season, like season one, there's like a couch on the curb. Then the apartment gets like crisped up. And then now we have. But Issa is essentially like in a spate of desperation. One of the reasons that we have Daniel at the center of this narrative is that without any real place to go, she's now moved in with this person who's maybe an ex, not quite an ex, and is, you know, there. And it's funny because the season opens with this kind of your typical kind of insecure sex scene shot from above. And you think, oh, wow, Daniel and Issa are back at it. But you realize Issa's
on
the couch.
Girl. Yes.
And it's another girl. So there's a lot going on with our crew on season three. Now, so let me ask, now that we've kind of recapped and caught everybody up with what's happening, what are our feelings about season three? Because I think it's received some mixed responses from the critics. Mm-hmm. In part, there's like a whole explosion on Twitter about like Lawrence not being there.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm actually fine with. Like, I missed him the first episode, but by the third one, I was like not like that worried about it.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, like, let me hear where, yeah, so you, when you were coming back in, you know, what are you thinking about season three? Like, each year it gets, you know, the production gets a little fancier. It looks nicer every time, you know.
I'm really sick of We Got Y'all. It's either an organization that works or it's not.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I could never be, I get that this is the only job that she has and it pays what it pays. But her coworkers are irritating. And I don't, this is a whack comment. I'm sick of We Got Y'all. However, I don't really... The reason why I'm like meh about season three is simply because this redemptive arc that we're expecting from this crew, I don't really know if I care if they make it or not. Mm. Like, I don't, you know, she's not doing a lot of rapping in the mirror anymore. So what's her passion?
Mm-hmm.
He's a SoundCloud rapper, but he's got a girlfriend who showed up episode three, I think. But I didn't know she really existed because he's always with somebody.
Or maybe episode two.
Yeah.
I just feel like it's messy. I feel like I knew what was happening every episode one and two in season one and season two. And now I feel like, again, this is where I feel like they spend more time on the post show material than they do
on the wind down
than they actually focus on the actual narrative structure, because I'm missing stuff. Things are falling out of place. And I felt like last week's episode where she hangs out with Daniel and they have their moment, you know, I've definitely been in those relationships where, you know, they started as a fuck buddy and then they end up becoming like your boo. I'm a prime example of making that happen. But there's also like there's not enough for me there. They're all living so separate, like disparate lives right now, well, that I just feel like there's one of the cohesion.
That's one of the things. That is one of the criticisms is that, that the characters seem more atomized. There's a whole episode that transpired without Molly, for example. I think that was episode 2.
Mm-hmm. Which I don't like.
And you know, and I think that like people miss that kind of ensemble feel. But Travelle, what are your feelings about season 3?
I am still wrestling with season 3. Like, I don't hate it. I'm not, like, opposed to it.
And we're early yet.
Yeah.
And,
before the halfway point. I will say I'm not missing Lawrence. Like, because I think, one of the ways that Issa has, like, explained Lawrence not being there, at least yet, because I think the reports are that he pops up in some episode later on.
I've been on set, and I won't verify that, but let's say maybe it happens.
I think I have enough sources that have said
Karen, you just
he will pop
it.
Up somewhere. but, like, I think, like, the way she's explained it is, like, are you hitting up your ex like that? Like, are you still connecting with your ex in that particular way? I think most people would say no. Once you cut somebody off, you cut them off, right? And so we don't see him. I actually like how messy, you said it was like kind of messy mm-hmm. and like complicated and yeah. confusing in some ways. Mm-hmm. I actually like that because I think that's in a lot of ways how like real relationships and real life is, right? In a lot of ways. And that was one of the concerns that I had about the first 2 seasons. It just seemed too perfect.
Sure.
Everything was like too regimented. Mm-hmm. And this one is just like Issa's doing stuff that like doesn't quite make sense. You know, she's like teasing Daniel but then backing away, and then he's getting mad, and then she's like, why is he mad at me? And now they're sleeping in the same bed, and she's, you know, sort of wanting to stay with him but not sure, like she wants to explore this particular relationship but he's not really, you know, interested in it, but he also is, but the friends are like, girl, don't do it, like you're already messing up, you know. And it's just like I like that messiness. I will say I want to see more and always want to see more of the friends and of the girl group. And so, like, the third episode, so much of it was, like, focused on Daniel and his issues working out this producer situation, which I guess is fine. There's somebody out there that wants to see him. But I want to see more of the ladies, like Molly's experiences at her job, dealing with this new black firm. Very interested in that.
It's true that the most radiant moment, actually, in episode 3 is, like, the girls hanging out at dinner.
Yes.
And it's just, like, we're the most last hour, we're the most fun... the most fun that we're having in the episode is situated. And I think that, I think that one of the things that it's doing, even though supposedly we extracted from a major relationship in season 2,
right,
one of the things so far is that it's establishing, like, the kind of thorniness, even if you cut off the ex who you broke up with, like, you are still surrounded by other exes mm-hmm. and still, like, engrossed in these other entanglements that can be really kind of... I don't know, like, that have their own kind of weird codependencies and stuff like that.
And, you know, I think it's really interesting, right? We all make stupid decisions, right? And, like, her sleeping on the couch of a dude that she, you know, once hooked up with, who previous to that she had a long-term crush on, and he's fucking some other girl, right, in the bedroom where she can hear them, like, exactly because she's sleeping on the couch, like... We all make stupid decisions. I'm not making that stupid decision, right? But, like, even the conversation about why she can't stay at Molly's house, and Molly's like, you broke my vase, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like those petty conversations you have with
but
your friends.
But that's what I like about them. Those conversations were, to me, a lot more well thought out and in depth. Back in season 1 and 2, that's what endeared me to them. They started season 2 with them having their talk up the hill in Culver City, the Culver Steps. They always had the Ethiopian restaurant on Fairfax. That I always think about that conversation. Mm. That's relatable. We need to see more conversations about that. Issa has not proven herself trusted to act on her own, and she's making a lot of decisions on her own, except for her taking Molly with her on the party lift.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But that got ratchet. But who has not had a night like that? Listen, okay? And they was way out. They was out near Staples, and I was like, girl, you don't know what you gonna get when you get over there midnight. But I mean, like, I just feel like those things keep it tight. And mm-hmm. I know they've got 30 minutes to play with, but I can't pinpoint exactly what it is that's not vibing with me.
Well, listen, you brought up We Got You All and your exhaustion with We Got You All. But actually, it's really relevant because I think the other dynamics that we're exploring so far in the season and which I think are going to continue to persist have to do with work workplaces and employment.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anywhere from the from driving Lyft to, you know, Molly's new law firm to like the kind of nonprofit industrial complex and insanity of like white liberalism that We Got Y'all.
Yes.
Where the controversy is about, you know, the logo.
Well, it's not great that there's a white hand scooping up black kids.
Yeah, in this climate, that comes off a little racist.
It wasn't racist when I made it. It's my hand. My hand's helping the community. Not a handout. It's a hand out.
It's not racist because it's my hand.
When she said that, I fell out. It's not racist because it's my hand. Yeah. Literally, when you look up white privilege, that's literally that scene on dictionary.com autoplay.
It was
like
so
a
good.
And then there's also the tantalizing possibility that Issa obviously is kind of straying from her We Got Y'all, I don't know, like, inertia to consider a different kind of nonprofit course.
One
right?
of the scenes that I really loved was when Issa and Frida are interviewing the potential candidate, the black girl, to come into the new office.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Frida leaves to go get Joanne, the boss. And so it's just like a black girl on black girl combo. Mm. And the interviewee's like, hey, girl, like, what's, you know, she want to know the tea. She want to know the black tea, you know, of how this office space is. And Issa's like, it's fine. And then the girl's like, how is it for you, though?
Yeah.
You've been here 5 years. And like in that moment, I think we saw that Issa was like, wow, I have been here for 5 years and I hate this place.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's one of those things I think, you know, we get caught in our work and in just like being comfortable.
Just black people?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You get comfortable with bullshit.
Yeah.
Because you just don't know the alternative. I never felt like I knew the alternative to bullshit until I worked for myself.
Yes.
Because the way I interact with people, way I interact with my clients, is completely different than when I worked for a company. Because at a company, I felt like I got to deliver for these people who have no concept, no idea, no understanding of what it is that I do and why my shit matters. Mm-hmm. And now that it's just me having to interact with global superstars, I know that I have to learn how to just not even learn. I've already learned. I just have to walk in confident, be able to produce, and that's all they want to hear about. And there's something that I relate to her on the level. I've never worked at a nonprofit, but I've definitely worked for a company that ain't had no money. And you just struggle till you get complacent. And I can understand and relate to that per se, but this, I mean, I want Karen obviously is driving, but this kind of, we can circle back on this, but this comes back, that scene came brought to me the whole narrative about her as a black, portraying an African-American female when in reality, like, you know, we can come back to that. I have so many thoughts.
She's got
about
thoughts.
That scene.
She's got thoughts.
And it's cutting off. But I mean, one of the things, obviously the title is Insecure and it is about the title character Issa, like trying to figure out like some way of inhabiting different senses of security, whether or not it's like psychological, like an emotional confidence, but also like even just kind of job security, just like a sense of like, you know, placeness and stability. Like, you know, when she sees Kelly, you know, for accounting advice, that was also one of the better scenes of the season. She's like, your credit score's like
Kelly, played by Natasha Rothwell, is like the MVP of this show.
Yeah, she really
is. Really is.
They don't use her enough.
They don't.
Yeah. But I mean, like, so, you know, that's one of the things too, because what you have is in that friend group, like a contrast in different levels of financial stability and different levels of like, as black women inhabiting, you know, career security, whether or not it's career security or relationship security that provides this other sense of stability, you know, and, you know, Kelly's got her accounting firm. We've, you know, obviously Molly is the bougie lawyer who's got the nice downtown loft.
Yeah.
And the multiple, like the polyamorous thing going on, which we definitely need to talk about.
Yeah.
But, you know, but Issa, I think, you know, is still trying to find the color of her parachute, to use that metaphor from back in the day.
You really brought that back.
You know, really brought that back. But it's also
that's yellowing in my bookcase as we speak.
but also, you know, it's just this sense of like, okay, well, what do you, you know, when you're kind of kicking around and like you're trying to figure out what you want, that bleeds into in your career life, that bleeds into your personal life. And that's kind of, you know, what's always dogged her as a character is that the kind of these levels of indecision that you see in her intimate life, like being replicated in her work life.
Sure.
And the only times that she does show incentive, particularly at We Got You All, at the beginning of the season, where she's trying to find out why certain clients are leaving, that's when you see like the kind of casual liberal racism of the situation, being like, well, you know, why did you overstep your boundary? We've confined you because you misbehaved previously.
And maybe that's why I'm mad at this season, because it reminds me of the shit I used to go through. And now I've just, you know, you've learned how to manage. I relate it too much, maybe. But the thing is that I would like young African-American people to see that, and all people to see that this is, you know, people of color to see, like, this is the shit that goes on, particularly Black people. Like, this is what you're faced with. You're trying to go the extra mile. You're trying, and you're at the behest of this old raggedy white woman who just doesn't have like the wherewithal to even understand that her logo is bullshit. And my favorite part of the scene, I believe it was second or third episode, is when they're talking about it after at lunch. Okay, and then they're talking about it.
Yes.
And everybody has an opinion, but they basically put it on Issa to be the one who's like gonna solve it because she's Black,
right?
And giving her like what they think is a leadership moment, which again is stupid fucking white liberalism, where it's like, just because I'm Black, I'm supposed to put my neck
right.
I'm driving a Lyft, okay?
Around
the party Lyft.
Right.
I'm buying Raisinets and putting Arrowhead in the back of the passenger seat just to make my life work. So you gonna make me stick my Black ass out? And this is what I'm telling you. Like, I like those aspects. I like of it. So the work storyline, when you, and just you guys both so beautifully put it together, when you look at the work narrative, yes, it's relatable and it's hard to watch for somebody who's struggled so long doing the right thing, doing the wrong thing, but doing the thing that made the sense, because ultimately it paid the fuck off. I'm successful. But at the same time, it's like, it wasn't easy. It wasn't even easy 2 years ago.
And I liked from that, I liked how, you know, the gay character is like, well, I represent the gay perspective. You represent the Black perspective. She's like, but I don't want to.
Exactly.
She's like, why I always got to be the angry Black woman?
Yes, exactly.
You know, I just want to be here.
I just
want
to be here and exist.
I love it.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit about, like, you know, the relatability of Issa's situation. But, you know, like, I mean, especially for those of us living in L.A., like, I mean, you know, how do we feel, like, how relatable is, like, are the kind of scenarios that we're coming across in Insecure? How relatable do you imagine it is to, like, this kind of broader audience who's dropping into it, or whatnot?
I think it has the potential. Like, there are different aspects and different characters that people will identify with, right? So if you're in corporate America, Molly may be the character that, like, most suits you. And you see how, you know, the current difficulty she's having transitioning from a white law firm, and they do things in particular. They have DocuSign.
DocuSign and offsite storage.
Right,
we
and
take
offsite.
It to a courier. I was like, girl, more expensive.
It was so hilarious. And like every time she keeps saying, well, at my old firm, we do it this particular way. And her assistant, this Black woman, is like, okay. Well, girl, you here now is basically what she's saying.
Exactly.
And we don't do it that way.
Exactly.
And so, like, those types of things, I think there are different parts of different characters that people who don't, like, live in the coasts, right, can identify with. And I think we all can identify with just, like, being in spaces that aren't necessarily built with us in mind, and figuring out ways to navigate that. And then having a friend group that, like, I think that's the most relatable part, having a friend group that try to, like, holds you accountable for your foolishness and your bullshit. Right? And like they all are just like, okay, girl, you on some fuck shit right now.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious, you know, like kind of extending that conversation about the different ways that it's relatable, but also like the different ways that we find pockets of authenticity in it or whatever. And, you know, I'm wondering how we think about the, you know, the kind of authenticity in the depictions of, let's say, Molly's polyamorous scenario or situation, and how that intersects with kind of her also kind of her corporate identity or her other, you know, like in what ways do we see that, like, kind of framing for us maybe like Molly's different relationship to herself, her racialization, to like her sense of community or what her role is versus some of the other characters on the show?
I think it's more authentic than not to see, like, someone who's, like, very buttoned up and, like, very much got their, like, career shit together, but then their personal life is a shit show and then it's in shambles. And I think that's what Molly kind of represents. And just that whole idea of that polyamorous relationship. It's one of those things where, like, you can tell that she's uncomfortable with it and she doesn't really want to do it, but, like, apparently Dro is just really good at sex or something, and like she can't pull herself away.
They make him look good at sex on
they
camera.
Do, but they also make everybody look good
it's
at
true.
Sex.
It's true. They make him, like, big props to Ava Burkowski, the director of photography, for that.
Yes.
She lights the hell out of a scene.
Doesn't she?
Wish she could have been with us.
I know. Wish she could have been with us tonight, but she's shooting.
Lights the hell out of it.
Lights the hell out of it.
I mean, there's something to be said about the polyamorous aspect of it, but they're just normalizing being a side bitch. Sorry. Sorry.
You are clutching your pearls.
You really clutched the shit out of me.
You took the breath out of me. Is it still, but is she actually a side chick?
She's
when the
side bitch.
But like, I feel, okay, maybe you're right.
Well,
maybe
because
you're right.
Yeah, you were about to ask, is she really, if there's like a
because,
shared
like,
understanding.
Right. And like the wife, like, no, I know, like, one of the things, like, we've all been like very hesitant of like whether he's actually in a racial relationship, whether the wife actually knows. But like, after they have sex one morning, his wife calls and he picks up the phone. He's like, yeah, I'm still at Molly's house. And so like, she's got to know. It's just like,
but
the nature of their type
of
relationship.
Bottom bitch and there's the top bitch. And
well,
you,
there you go.
There, you know what I mean? To me, it's just like, and that's where my radical feminism just jumps in, because that would not be happening in the Mitchell Rohrbaugh house. I'm mad I'm not at back to school night right now. But I'm a respectful hoe. You know what I mean? What I'm saying? Like, I just feel like there is something to be said about being a professional. Got it all. Men are coming at you from all sides. Little Rel was in the house. What happened to him? Like, there's all these things swirling around Molly's grasp and attempt and basically her success. And she would choose to be with this base ass Negro. And because in his complicated life, she doesn't need more complications. She's bored. Being an attorney, I cannot imagine that being an attorney, corporate attorney, right? She's like corporate, and she's probably like an IP attorney. Like, that's boring. You know what I mean? Like,
it's just like, right?
Yeah. I feel like if you're downtown, like, you're an IP attorney, like a commercial attorney.
She's
like
making the big dollars.
She's making the big dollars, but
Well, she's in Century City now with this new law firm.
Girl, they fooled you with that address.
Right, right. Because they don't have an on-site courier.
No, they don't.
Okay.
Okay?
They
the courthouse is very fur. It's a long 10. That's down Robertson. Hit the 10 at the right time.
Yes.
Exit on Grand or Main.
Yes.
And really try to make it to that courthouse, and you got to pay $20 to park. So I'm just saying, wouldn't it be cheaper just to talk your sign to motherfuckers?
It's so funny. I mean,
that's like $45.
It's so funny, though, because I think that there have been several lines, like, throughout the series where it's like, you know, people, like, I think even describing, you know, Molly's relationship with Dro is like, that's some white people shit, right? Like, polyamory. And then there's, like, been, like, kind of controversies around also the kind of panic around getting cum in your face in season two.
That really annoyed the shit out of me.
Yes.
You know? And and so, I mean, you know, Insecure is not without its share of controversies within the Black community.
Mm-hmm.
Also, especially on Black Twitter, you know?
Yeah. We don't agree about nothing.
Nathan.
And I'm just wondering, like, you know, so if, like, you were to pick one of those controversies in which you would play the kind of devil's advocate or be on the kind of not necessarily like rah-rah pro-insecure side, like, what, which one of those do you think that you would want to most bring to the table and discuss?
I'm gonna let you go first.
Girl. I would say that my biggest issue with the show is, you know, I think last night there was a tweet that went out that I've never commented twice about the same subject on two different stories in one day on Twitter. But I'm very appalled that HBO is out of the adult entertainment business. They've basically taken all of their erotica and softcore porn programming off streaming and off their programming slates. And, you know, that's how I grew up.
Yeah.
That's how I got my rocks off when
but
I was
But you don't need HBO no more. These
I don't
kids
need
these days,
it.
They got
Skinamax.
And Skinamax. Listen. And Spice Channel.
And BET Uncut.
And BET, well, yes, that too. I'm married to a white bread boy from North Carolina, so BET Uncut wasn't hitting it for me. It was a little bit more softcore porn, Spice Channel. But I will say that, like, you know, the prudeness around sexuality and then going so extreme in this direction just for a narrative about the threesome thing and the polyamorous relationship. We don't even delve into that. We don't even really go deep into that. Mm. And then, you know, Issa, you know, she cheated on Lawrence and she ends up with this dude who's just like, to me, a bum.
Oh,
do you think? Do I think Daniel's
you fall
a,
hard?
A bum.
Daniel's a bum. Look, in 2018, your SoundCloud better be hitting or it ain't. Because to next year, when SoundCloud falls apart, then I'm gonna be wondering what is it next? Because we're leaving this era where that's where you're discovered and it's a long term scenario. Mm-hmm. You know, think about it. We had Chewbacca mom. Where's she at?
Not Chewbacca mom.
Where's Chewbacca mom at? We was poised to live in a world where Chewbacca mom might be president. Where's she at?
No, thank you.
Okay, so like I'm saying, like the whole notion of being discovered and blah 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 blah. Kanye apologized tonight for saying slavery was a choice.
Oh, did he?
Yes, honey. We're living in a different era at this point. We might sweep the midterms. We're looking at a different in Democrats. We're looking at a world that is shifting.
You're welcome.
We're looking for a world that is shifting, and I don't want to talk about you being a side bitch and it's glorified as polyamory because we don't know that that was his wife, Colin. That could have been his homie. We don't know.
Valid.
We don't know.
Valid.
Okay? Valid. I'm very, very, the puritanical representation that Issa, come in my face, honey, calm down. It is a rag. It is a warm rag, and it is over. Okay, like we. It's just too.
It's Pop Rocket after dark.
Pop Rocket after
got the
dark.
Line on
yes. Channel 500. Ask the line. I'm just saying. Like I don't know. I heard puritanical bullshit. Like the. And I guess maybe because I am actually older than I was when this was occurring to me and I felt like I could relate. I don't relate. Mm-hmm. I don't relate. And I think maybe that's why I'm bitter is because I just don't relate because I'm 10 years past where she's at and I struggled and I worked real hard and it's 2018 and I'm expecting more from her in some of these little scenarios.
I feel that.
Well,
my controversial thingy, I think
Do
I would say...
you have anything to say in response to Winterfell?
In response to her... I don't disagree per se.
Girl, thank you.
Per se, though. I do think the show could do a lot more when it comes to just its general depictions of, like, sex and sexuality.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like, broadly speaking, that was going to get me to my controversial point. Like, the treatment of the brother character who's gay and has a white partner.
He was like a flick in the night.
And we've literally seen him like twice, maybe three times throughout this entire three seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And like I want more. Like I feel like you're dangling something in front of me just so that you can say, you know, we represented every part of Black America as we could, right? I want to know more about his story. Like it's your brother, for goodness sakes. Like theoretically, you would be having more deeper conversations and extra conversations and stuff with your brother as you are, you know, with maybe not. You know, not everybody has a nice family situation.
But it ain't. She was about to ask him for some money.
She was. And to move back in. And so it was just like, what is this? I want to know more. I also find it interesting that he has a white partner only because all black men on television always have a white partner. And like, black queer love just apparently isn't a thing between two male bodies or whatever.
Well, it is a very straight world that Insecure builds for us.
Yes.
You know, and even like in its kinkiest aspects, like the kind of gayness or like queerness is like kind of very compartmentalized. Mm-hmm. And as you said, kind of played for like laughs or just kind of like a contrast right. to this world, this kind of female world that like is so super straight. And, in, you know, like in different experiences I've had in various communities, it's just like it's never that clean.
Right. Right. And even I think it was first season, Molly was dating a guy who had like had a relationship of some sort of relations with a guy, and like was like either bi or like had done it, but I was straight now. And like the conversations around that and like sexuality and sexual orientation and identity and all of that. I don't know. That show, I think it muddied all of that up. And like, it was, for me, that was one of the situations where I was like, I expected something different.
But HBO does that. HBO does that with every female-centric show. They did it on Girls. Mm. They did it on Sex and the City. It was always like an oddity that this man could possibly love a woman and a man right. at the same time.
Right.
And I'm just really irritated mm-hmm. by that whole entire notion, because it's like, grow the fuck up. I was tolerant about it enough because I grew up in San Francisco where this was mm-hmm. status quo. And that was a long ass time ago. Today I was talking about how I used to listen to Oh Mickey on the 45, and somebody was like, what's a 45? And I was like, get out of my face. So I'm just saying, like, that is, if we're moving into a path towards complete and total acceptance, mm-hmm. like it shouldn't be jolting or shocking to you.
Right.
So right. So I feel like the brother on the show, to be honest, I feel like I'm popping in, your shit is garbage, and I'm a pop right back on out. And that's how I feel about Issa's scenario. It's like I'm doing my thing and you're over there just like figuring your shit out. And I want to know, I'm like you said, I'm curious about him. Mm-hmm. I want to know more about him. I want to know more about her relationship with her parents. I want to know yes. this dynamic. Yeah. You know, we need to go deeper than this. I'm just, you know, we can only toe this line of interest amongst the key players for so long if we're only being served like pebbles of information.
Right.
Or
if we're going to like be centered on a kind of love yeah. triangles in absentia, even with Lauren's not there.
Yeah.
I mean, my hope for the rest of the season is to see, I think, more again of like the kind of girl group, mm-hmm. Like doing their thing, to actually see some of the other characters receive more time over the course of time. I think that's one of the corrections, love it or hate it, Orange is the New Black made. Like, it, yes. they kind of left its core, you know, kind of couple, and mm-hmm. then, like, you got a lot of backstory and everybody else. And I think that making it a more complete world, I mean, understandably, the show was generated from, you know, Issa Rae's, like, awkward girl. I mean, it is about Issa,
right?
But, seeing this world kind of increase a little bit and like its boundaries and like the kind of fullness of it like come to fruition would be like totally wonderful.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not going to give up on it, certainly. I mean, it is one of the few things that I look forward to.
Better
than
Ballers.
It's way better than Sharp Objects, frankly.
Wow.
And Ballers.
Wow.
Ballers one more time. Maybe I'll make it a go away.
I'm just like, yeah. I mean, it's completely different than either of the two, but, you know.
I remember the first tweet on the season premiere. Somebody was like, how dare they put Ballers in front of Insecure.
Well, I mean, it's a curiosity indeed.
Sure. Whatever.
Any final or closing thoughts?
Pull it together.
So, Travell, what are your hopes and wishes, desires for Insecure as we move forward?
I just really want more Kelly. Like, I love the scene when, like you mentioned, when Issa goes to have her accountant situation and Kelly's just like, girl, you ain't got no money.
Well, yeah, I love that part in the supper scene, actually, where, you know, Molly, of course, like, reveals that Issa's been back sleeping the same bed with Daniel, and everybody gives her shit.
I told you not to sleep in his bed.
Mm-mm. Really?
So you figured out how to pay him after all? That ass.
No. See, y'all don't understand. We're not even sleeping together, and we're getting along great. So what's the problem?
It's Daniel. You and Daniel is always the problem.
But it's not this time. You know why? Because we're talking and shit. He's been there for me, and I think I'm finally seeing him for who he really is.
I'm seeing him because you don't got nothing in your eye. Ooh, duck, calm, fit. Yes.
And like the way that she delivers lines is just like so hilarious. And like, I want more of that. It's her moments that I laugh out loud at.
Like, so a whole episode, possibly.
Yeah, let's like, do a whole episode.
From her perspective at seeing everybody else's clownish behavior, or like her perspective on what everybody's doing.
Yes, I want it. I want her.
Yeah, well, you heard it from us, HBO. We've given you a pitch for what to do with Kelly and what to do with the future of Insecure. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back right after this.
Hi, I'm Biff.
And I'm Teresa.
And we host When Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting.
Whether you are a parent or just know kids exist in the world, join us each week as we honestly share what it's like to be a parent. Turns out it isn't what we thought it would be. For example, stickers on car windows? It's no longer about what type of monster would let that happen, and more like realizing you are that monster.
So join us each week as we judge less, laugh more, and remind you that you are doing a great job.
Download One Bad Mother on MaximumFun.org or Apple Podcasts. And yes, there will be swears.
Pop Rocket is supported in part by Care Of, a monthly subscription vitamin service that delivers personalized vitamin and supplement packs. Care Of's fun online quiz asks you about your diet, health goals, and lifestyle choices, and only takes 5 minutes to find out what vitamins and supplements you specifically need. Your vitamins are delivered in personalized, easy-to-remember daily packs. And vegan and vegetarian supplement options are available to match your dietary needs. For 25% off your first month of personalized Care Of vitamins, visit takecareof.com and enter code ROCKET.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Karen Tongson. With me in the studio are
Winter Mitchell-Rohrbaugh
and Travelle Anderson.
So every week on Pop Rocket, we ask our panel, what's your current jam? And just as a reminder, next week, we're going to get into the winner of our summer jams season. It's our summer jam episode. I know you've been waiting for it. It's been the long durée here.
I'm just letting you know, as a sneak peek, I hate all of it.
See? Okay, so Winter hates all of it. I have come around to a couple of different things.
Wow.
It may be from a state of, you know, I'm a generous soul.
You're a generous soul.
But, you know, we'll be back.
If
of course,
Sweetener is not on any of these brackets,
I mean,
I'm not with it.
The song Sweetener, the whole album, because the whole album is amazing.
The whole, it's. Okay, I wouldn't go
all
that
to
far.
Say, we're getting a little bit like deep into it. I mean, at least what I heard
there's
of it.
There's like four tracks that are fucking.
Well,
amazing.
Okay, you know, that's as far as I heard driving from like downtown to school. So,
okay,
you know, anyway.
Fine, okay.
So we're talking about our jams this week, though. So stay tuned for summer jams next week. But our jams this week, Travelle, what is your current jam?
My current jam, or at least one of them, is from Teyana Taylor's recent album, Keep the Same Energy. It's titled WTP, which stands for What Work This Pussy.
Yes.
And it's like it's basically like a ballroom type, you know, underbeat, and she's singing over it. It is just like so good.
Just sing the blues.
Ooh, that has a nice thump.
Isn't it everything?
Yeah.
Like it makes you want to vogue to it, you know? Yes. Yes.
Do you stroll through airports just like posing?
Yes. It's one of those songs that like you want to like just like strut down a catwalk to it.
But do you like it more than Anna Wintour by Azealia Banks?
Actually, yes. I do.
Wow.
I do. So, okay. Listening, I'm sorry, just listening to a lot of Azalea's music, I just can't divorce all the other foolishness going on with her.
You can't separate the man from the music like Michael Jackson.
That being said, though, I do think, as with a lot of Teyana Taylor's, you know, recent album, like, it's so unfinished. And Anna Wintour, I do love that song. And the video for it and everything. But I just, I want it more for Teyana. But that song, I really love.
Okay. Teyana, as they say, that is a banger.
Yeah.
It's my hand.
It's my hand.
It's my hand.
All right, Winter Mitchell Ragnarok. Winter Mitchell Ragnarok, what's your jam?
That is so my new Mary name. Okay, it's not a jam per se, but I thought I would lace y'all since I'm back in a real way. Yesterday was the 9th anniversary of DJ AM's death. And I don't know if you guys know who DJ AM is. I've talked about him on the show before. DJ AM was a prolific celebrity DJ. And I don't use that. I actually use that super lightly because he was more than a celebrity DJ. He really ushered in nightclub culture in a meaningful way in the aughts in Los Angeles. He really was able to sort of put the stamp on Los Angeles nightclub culture. This man was the soundtrack and sort of the vibe for some of the most fun, legendary parties that permeated that era, when the era when Lohan, Britney, and Paris were queen, when Katy Perry was just an apple in the eye of the DJ she was blowing. Like, it was I'm coming hard, and I don't even fucking care if it gets all over anyone at this point.
Woo!
This is one of those DJs that you kind of never forget, especially if you were on the circuit in this time. And I think about him often because I definitely followed him all throughout my early 20s. I mean, when you're broke and you really want to have a good time, you kind of go to what's the best. And by the way, when you're broke and want to have a good time, you have to isolate it to Saturday. And you have to isolate it to Friday. And you just have to find the best party possible, or else back then it was like a $50 cab ride each way just to figure out and then you'd be out $100 and really desperate the Saturday. Like, I have to definitely go to work on Monday because I just fucked off $100 trying to get to a good party. This is a playlist by him, and it was an unreleased mix. It's from his SoundCloud profile. It's from 2005. He had a way of being able to mix current and at the time current and older music and really sort of marry together these sounds. So, like, the party never stopped. And that's what I think people liked about him. We were moving out of an era where you'd play like 4 tracks from 50 Cent's album and that would make a night. But he was getting into an era where he was just mixing vibe. And he was a really great DJ. He went through a lot to try to get to where he was. And I miss him, and a lot of people in LA specifically and New York miss him. And this is just a clip from one of his unreleased mixtapes. That really feels like 2005.
Yeah,
that really does.
Some odd vibes.
Yes.
I feel that for sure. Yeah, especially that particular kind of that bass that's kind of like kind of like flat and like, but like has that fuzz to it.
Yes. And it's Justin Timberlake. It's going from Justin Timberlake to Justice.
Yeah.
Like, he was like a Trivial Pursuit of DJ mixes. He was like, I'm going to give you a little bit of, you know, alliteration. I'm going to give you a little bit of old and new. I'm going to give you, and I like that about him. And he was a sweet soul.
Well, look for that whole mix. You will enjoy it.
Yeah, it was good. 2 hours.
Okay, so my jam this week is from one of my favorite recent bands of the past, like, half decade or so. Well, really, it's a person, but it's Christine and the Queens, a.k.a. Eloise Letizier. And she's just dropped another new track and is whetting our appetites in anticipation for the full album. And as I mentioned several months ago when I featured another of their recent tracks, she is exploring new dimensions of masculinity. This is kind of like female masculinity. Mm. This is kind of her vibe so far in these few. Well, thank you. In these few.
You're welcome,
In these tracks that we've been hearing from her so far. And this video is also really fantastic. This one shows her delving into a kind of menswear closet with things ranging from suits to bondage gear and her new cute short do. She's kind of playing with Narcissus's mirror. And in her words, this video is like American Gigolo with a twist.
Ooh!
And the song is $5. And it's Christine and the Queens.
Every option, mind the day I let myself carry away. Then you get $5 baby blues, $5 baby.
I love that kind of ethereal, yes, like Euro pop sound. I mean, it's got like, it's a little bit latter day Eurythmics-y, you know, it's like, it's got, her voice is not as like deep as Annie Lennox's, but it carries, like, the song itself kind of carries some of that Eurythmics vibe. Anyway, I've really enjoyed it, and it's, you know, I'm so excited for the new album. Okay, so that's it, folks. You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted this week by me, Karen Tongson, with Winter Mitchell Rohrbaugh. Hey. Welcome back. And one of our favorite guests, always, Travelle Anderson from
Thank
the LA
Times.
Thank
you for having me.
Travelle, tell us where to find you other than Toronto.
You can find me on the internet, on Twitter, at Travelle Anderson, that's TreveLAnderson, and on Instagram at Rayzhon, RayZhon.
And, I mean, I love Rayzhon's stories. Yeah. This is where we get the hair stories that we were talking about.
Yes.
So, you know, do follow him. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Bizzo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to everyone for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you haven't already, please review us. There's a reason Margaret Wobbler hasn't been here the last couple of weeks, and I think you know why. And so this week in particular,
we killed her.
You killed her without your 5-star review.
I wanted to clean return.
Well, so this week we'd like to thank, appropriately, Margaret, please try crystals. And with the subject line in the review, goat pod. And Margaret, please try crystals said, Pop Rocket is simply the best show. If you're looking for comedy, diverse views, queer theory, razor-sharp pop culture analysis, and a surprising reverence to the Canadian parliamentary system, then this show is for you. It is forever my jam. We are indeed an eclectic bunch. Stumblehead87 says, can I kill, marry, fuck, book club them all? In an almost unhealthy way, I look forward to this podcast every week and gobble it up as soon as possible once it's posted, usually while running. I've had to get past being embarrassed when I guffaw on these runs since the hilarious and delightful hosts make me LOL every time. Oh, that's so delightful. I can't pick a fave host. I want them all to be my friends in real life. Also, buy Guy's book. It's great. Well, thank you, Stumblehead87. I'm so thrilled that you are tickled by us and that you want to kill, marry, fuck, and book club all of us.
Yay.
Get in touch with us on Twitter if you like what you're listening to. We're at Pop Rocket, or join our Facebook group and join the discussion. Also, follow us on Instagram at Pop Rocket Podcast. We're a production of MaximumFun.org. And the show is edited by Shayna Deloria, and our senior producer is Swish Swish Bish, Laura Swisher.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.